to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back.
So today's guest is the amazing Schwa Potter. Schwa is a Renaissance man of sorts. He is an actor, singer, speaker, a blogger, a drag queen, a Liza Minnelli impersonator, and even a wedding officiant. But first and foremost, Schwa is a kind and compassionate human being, spreading his inspirational messages through humor and grace via his YouTube channel, Before Work, and that's work, W-E-R-K, as well as his blogs and speaking engagements. Recently, Schwa lost his longtime partner, Landon, to a tragic car accident. Prior to the accident, Schwa had already been putting out his positive messages surrounding mind, body, and spirit, but the loss of Landon caused Schwa to look at life even deeper and find a way to make a positive impact and to find a new normal. Aside from his performing, Schwa is helping others through the grieving process in some wonderfully creative ways. So Schwa, welcome to our show.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're very excited to have you today. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first, let us say how sorry we are for your loss.
Thank you.
And, you know, we thank you for coming on the show to talk with us, as Deb said. So Landon sounds like an incredibly special man. Can you tell us a little bit about him and the effect he had on your life?
I'm already getting emotional. Landon, he loved life. He loved living. And I think a big part of that was because he had suffered a lot of loss in his life, too. He lost his grandma, who he loved very, very much, about 7 years ago, and he had lost a friend to suicide when he was younger. And he had kind of a tumultuous childhood, moving around from place to place, divorce, living in different homes with different people. And so anyway, he just looked at the beauty in life because he didn't want to look at the pain. He worked through the pain, I think, in his own way, but he just didn't want to look at all of the shit of the world. He wanted to look at all the fabulousness. And so he just loved flowers, and he loved beautiful historic buildings, and he loved the sunshine more than anything in the world. And that was always where his focus was. And I'd say the biggest lesson he taught me was, you know, put your phone down. Mm-hmm. And look up, look at that, look at these things, look at the beauty, look at the flowers, look at our dog Brody. Look at everything that's beautiful and appreciate it and live in it, because life is short. And he would say that life is short. So he taught me how to kind of slow down and live in the moment. And he's the one who got me starting meditating, and he's the one that really gifted me with mindfulness. And I just don't know how I would be able to get through this experience, which is a lifelong experience now, right, without that kind of trying to live in the moment and be as mindful as I can.
Right, right. It's like he gave you this really strong foundation. And what's interesting is the symmetry. I love how the universe works. Just last night, I posted on Instagram just something very simple. And it was just like, look for the beauty in your life.
Yeah.
And it is. It's so important, because with all the devices, with all the distractions, we literally forget to, you know, stop and smell the roses.
And oh my gosh.
And it's those little things that make you so happy. And when, even when you touched on how he loves sunshine, I'm like, oh my God, I would have loved him. Like everything you mentioned. So thank you so much for sharing that.
And I just wanted to add quickly, the other thing about focusing on the beauty is it brings you more beauty.
Oh, right? Yeah, 100%.
Because whatever you focus on, you see more of. So, you know, if you're focusing all the crap, then you're going to see more of the crap. So I do love that he took, you know, took the time. And I love the blog post that you did about time. Mm. And, you know, that you said, you know, he would read and then the dog. And I loved all of it. It was very, very moving.
Yeah, it's something so important, I think, that I forget every single day, is to just stop and take a breath. And so because I forget every day, I have to remind myself every day. And I just have to look at where I'm at in the moment, how I'm feeling, and say, okay, what would Landon say? Or what would Landon do in this situation? Because he just was so good at using the tools that he had in his toolbox that he had learned. He loved to learn. And he was so good at using those tools to combat his own anxieties and depression. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was incredible. He was inspiring. And I know there are thousands of people across the planet that feel the same way.
Mm. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So switching gears just a little bit before we get into what you're doing now, can you tell us a little bit about your childhood and what led you to performing?
Yeah, sure. Well, I grew up as an Air Force brat. Oh. My dad was in the Air Force. So we moved around quite a bit until we landed in Kentucky, which is where the rest of my family is from. Mm. And I grew up there mostly, fourth grade through high school. And I just remember always loving make-believe and playing dress up. And I was always creative. I loved to draw and I loved to color. And I was quite a ham. I liked attention. I liked attention a lot. So I would always be trying to make people laugh. That was like my favorite thing to do. Mm-hmm. And then in church, we had a choir for the kids, and I got in the choir and I loved it. And they did little plays, and I would always get the lead in the plays, and everybody else would be pissed because I would always get the lead. And I was like, listen, Jesus loves me more than you. So, and it just kind of spiraled from there. I went on to do Cincinnati Boys Choir and did more plays in middle school, and then ended up doing community theater and children's theater in high school. And from there, I was like, I mean, I told my mom in seventh grade, I will be on Broadway. I will be an actor and I will be on Broadway. And 20 years later I was. So,
that's exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing. So yeah, along the way, I just I pretty much focused on my career in theater. And now it's branched out into so many other avenues of performance and creativity. So I just feel like right now, the only thing that's keeping me going is making stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that totally makes sense. I think it was in one of your blogs, you talked about, you know, doing theater was kind of this safe haven. And I totally related to that, because growing up, Deb and I were just talking about this earlier, theater was very big for me when I was in middle school and high school. And, you know, because I came from a town where if you weren't good at sports, well, just forget it. You're a big loser. So, drama was huge to me. And in fact, I majored in drama my first year of college. I didn't have the cojones to keep it up, but then I ended up behind the scenes. That's actually how I met Missy Cohen. But it was such a place of community, this like-minded tribe that maybe others in the school thought were weirdos, but I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. They are the weirdos, and they're the ones that are most in touch with their emotions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
we all have this weird, similar experience going through life. And so we can cling together in a way that I don't think anyone in any other industry can right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so true. Yeah. I mean, we're just talking about the fact that I still have those friendships today, and I don't keep in touch with a ton of people from high school, despite social media. And, you know, it's easy to find people. It's a certain core, and a lot of them are from my drama days.
Yeah. Yeah. They're the best people. I mean, everybody's great, but,
right. It's a special relationship for sure.
It's just special. It's special.
Right. Yeah. I think, and you know, I also was in drama. I was more of a behind the scenes person in the drama. I liked doing the sets and the lights and those kinds of things, but it was an immediate family, and there were a group of people that they weren't afraid to emote.
Yeah.
And I think that's what forged the bond so quickly, is that you connected on this deeper connection. That, you know, that maybe, you know, I don't know, I've never been on a football team, but I can't imagine there's a lot of emoting going on a football team.
Yeah, but you can also feel, it was the first time I felt comfortable to truly be myself, as cliche as it sound, but just to be silly and goofy and not worried about being judged.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's the best.
It is the best.
It is the best.
So, now kind of moving to what you're doing now, I know that currently you're doing a series on your YouTube channel. Again, it's called Before Work, about grieving. So how does art and creativity factor in when dealing with the grieving process?
Well, I actually started working on a play on a Tuesday, and then on that Saturday, Lana died.
Wow.
So, sorry.
No, nope, no worries.
So I had to make a choice. I had to choose whether to continue working on the play or leave the play. And, I knew from past experience, after being in theater for many years, that I would be able to go into the theater space and hopefully kind of leave my world behind and enter the world of the play, which is what you kind of have to do as an actor. And in doing so, would kind of get a break on the daily from feeling everything, because I'm a big feeler. I'm a very emotional person. And I know just from what everybody has said that the only way to really live in your grief and work within your grief is to lean into it. I knew I'd be able to go to the theater and not have to lean into anything except my work. And that was a nice distraction for me. Mm-hmm. At the same time, getting to be creative, it just fills my spirit. It always has. And I knew that it would just make me feel good. And it did. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience getting to do that play. And now that the play is over, I'm finding that the only times that I'm happy or really feeling good at my best is when I'm making stuff. So I've been doing a lot of graphic art, which is something new for me, the graphic side of it. But in the past, I did visual art. It's been 20 years. It's been over 20 years since I have dipped my toe into that world.
Wow.
But I'm finding a lot of joy in that, because I get lost in drawing and then hours go by, I haven't felt sad, and suddenly I have something beautiful.
That totally makes sense to me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm loving that. And, I have, shows coming up. I do a monthly drag cabaret show in Pittsburgh that I've been taking a break from, but my first show back is this coming Friday, and I'm really looking forward to that. I have another show lined up in New York that I'm really looking forward to, and those are opportunities for me to just be not only someone else, live in a different world, but give me the opportunity to do what is my calling, which is taking away people's suffering.
Mm. I love that.
That's really wonderful. And I really feel like this interview will help so many, because even when you were talking about the drawing and how healing that can be and the joy you feel doing that, I think there's something so powerful about using your hands and that connection to the heart, just kind of that kinesthetic, powerful thing that goes on when you're actually either writing or drawing.
I love that. Yeah. I never really thought about it like that, but it's so true. I mean, you just feel so grounded when you're using your body in a way that is either creating change around you or building something, or, you know, it's funny. I even parallel it to doing things around the house, like washing dishes. I feel so good when I'm washing dishes.
Oh, I get it. It's like meditative a little bit, you know?
Yes. It is. And I'm using my hands and I'm focused on this one task, and I can just kind of like exhale. And I know that I don't have anything else to do until I'm done with this one task.
Right. Mm. And isn't that when, it's funny to me, ideas usually will pop, like really good ideas pop into your head when you're doing kind of meditative things like that.
Yes. And it's always when I'm washing dishes and my hands are wet. I'm like, okay, now I got to stop washing dishes, dry my hands, get my journal, write this down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I totally get it, because it's happened to me. And I think it happens to a lot of people, because it's one of those things people say, it's usually when you're exercising, in the shower, washing dishes, or vacuuming. Like,
yep, always in the shower.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yes, it is. But, you know, I think that because you're focused on that simple task, or rather the sort of crazy brain part of you is focused on that simple task, it opens the mind to sort of let, you know, whatever you want to call it, the divine, the higher power, the creative energy, whatever that is, come in, and you can recognize it and hear it.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, to that end, it's really all about making space for that creativity to come in, for things to come into your life. It's one of the reasons that after Landon died, I decided to stop cleaning. I'd been cleaning houses for 7 years as pretty much my primary source of income. And I couldn't do one more house after he died, because I just, you know, I'm like, I don't have time to waste. I have to be creating. I have to be giving my gifts to the world. Otherwise I'm doing a disservice to myself and to them. And I'm a fortunate person. I do have talents and skills that I know a lot of people don't have, but those are mine. Everybody has whatever it is that's theirs, and whatever it is that's their passion. But you have to make room to allow it to blossom. You have to make room to hear the divine come in, and sometimes it's scary, but there is no time to waste.
No, you're so right, and I think the death of a loved one's, it's just such a catalyst for change for so many people. I know that was the case in my own life, and I hear it from a lot of people. And it's that same, okay, what am I doing? Stop wasting time. This is not what's important to me. I need to be following my passion. Even for the people who don't know what that quite is, they just know, okay, I shouldn't be in this corporate job. Or in your case, I shouldn't just be cleaning. I should just be going for it full force.
I feel like if you can recognize the things that make you feel good, and you can pay enough attention to notice when something is clicking for you, or just like, you're feeling your best when you're doing this particular thing, look deeper at that. Look deeper at that, and you might find a passion within there.
Right.
Yes.
Great way to look at it.
Yes. So of the things you've already talked about, in addition to that, you are also working as a wedding officiant in your business, acting officiant. What could someone expect if you officiated their wedding? And how did you get into that?
Well, first of all, what you'd expect with me as your officiant is we meet several times. Mm-hmm. We do a few interviews, and I learn all about your love story, how you met, your first date, your first kiss, how you describe each other, et cetera, et cetera. And then I take those interviews and I craft a super personalized 15 to 20 minute ceremony. For most people, it's super contemporary. For some, they want a little bit more conservative or traditional language. So mm-hmm. I shape it, I form it to the exact specifications of the couple. And then I perform it in whatever costume you want. So some people, I'd say 80% of people want me in a tuxedo or a suit. Mm-hmm. And it's more traditional with a contemporary flow. And then other people have me come and perform their ceremony in full drag. Yeah. I've also performed in like cosplay costume mm-hmm. type stuff. And those are really fun. I mean, those are the most fun.
Oh, yeah.
I have one coming up where it's a drag brunch. So they have, oh my gosh, it's going to be so fun. They have a cocktail hour and then there's a 20 minute drag show. And then the finale of the drag show is their wedding.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
And nobody knows that I'm going to be there. Nobody knows there's going to be a drag show. They just know it's a wedding brunch.
Oh, that's very fun.
Yeah. And I got into it randomly. My sister asked me to do it for her. And then these two girls that I had met at a pride event that I hosted reached out and asked if I would marry them in drag. And it was so fun. I was just like, okay, well, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Well, it's such a great way to sort of experience, again, the beauty, right? Because it's just a positive thing. And that the energy that comes out of that, it must be very satisfying and it, great experience.
Yeah. It's my absolute favorite gig I've ever had. Every single couple is different. Mm-hmm. I can tell right away if they really love each other or not. I haven't had anybody who hasn't.
Wow. That's great.
I haven't had anybody that I've been like, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, if I felt like they didn't really love each other or it was weird, I wouldn't do it.
Good for you.
Yeah, it has to be aligned. Yep. It has to feel right.
Yeah.
Well, and now you're coming upon wedding season, so I'm guessing you're going to get pretty busy.
Yeah, I have four weddings booked this year already, and I have a meeting for a fifth one tomorrow.
Right.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I love it. It's so fun. It's not a ton of time and effort that I have to put into it, maybe 10 hours, including the wedding. Mm-hmm. So it's great. I really love it.
Something that you love and fills your soul. It doesn't get better than that.
Hello.
Yeah, seriously. That's fun.
So I know you've talked a little bit about what's going on in the acting career. Are there any new projects you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a show called The Santa Land Diaries at City Theater in Pittsburgh this coming holiday season. It's a play based on the David Sedaris book.
Oh, God, I love David Sedaris.
Yes, and they turned it into a one-man show, so it's just me on stage for 35 pages.
Wow.
That should be super fun. And I'm talking with some other people about some other play projects, but mostly I'm just working on getting my drag cabaret show in more venues. So I'm bringing it to New York next month. I'm hoping to kind of start touring it monthly from Pittsburgh to Columbus to Cincinnati. And
well, now you have to come to Boston too.
I would love to come to Boston, honey. You tell me where the cabaret space is, girl, and we'll hook it up.
We'll look into it.
Yeah, I'd love that.
What got you into the whole drag cabaret arena? Was that just sort of an offshoot of the acting, or?
Yeah, I stopped acting, quote unquote, acting for a while after I had been lucky enough to be cast in Mary Poppins on Broadway. That was my dream. And after it was over, I was kind of like, oh, now I have to go back to auditions. And, you know, like the business of acting, especially in theater, I mean, and film TV, although I have much less experience there, it's just hard and it's just not fun. The business part of it isn't fun. And I just wanted to try something else. I wanted to have a quote unquote normal life for a while, be able to go home for holidays, be able to plan vacations when I wanted. Could never do that as an actor because I never knew when the next gig would be. And usually they were over holidays, you know.
I
quit acting. I went out to Fire Island in New York, which is this fabulous little mm-hmm. gay resort area. And I started cleaning houses. And while I was there, I met all these drag queens. And they were fabulous. And they were talented. And they were living their lives on stage. And I was like, ooh, yeah, I miss that. I'm going to try that. So I tried it and fell in love. I was like, oh, I can do whatever I want. I can look however I want. I can do whatever numbers I want. I can perform when I want. And I was lucky enough to book a weekly gig in New York just a couple months after I started. And I did that gig for like a year and a half, every single week, 90-minute show,
wow,
a brand new show every week. And I just kind of cut my teeth in that little 40-room cabaret space, 40-seat cabaret space. I cut my teeth and it just kind of blossomed from there. I tried the club scene. It wasn't for me. I like to go to bed early and get up early, like Benjamin Franklin.
Yes.
Oh, I hear you.
So, yeah. So my show's at like 8 o'clock. I've got fans who are in their early 80s. So it's got to be nice and early for all the people.
Good.
I love it. Yeah. And I love it. And I get to just kind of be on stage by myself for 90 minutes and bullshit with the audience and sing whatever songs I want. And people keep paying me to do it. So I guess they like it.
Hey,
you can't beat that. Now, do you have a bunch of different characters or favorite characters that you do?
You know, in my show, I always am my main drag character, Schwa de Vive.
Yeah, I love that.
Yes. and every now and then I will bring my Liza Minnelli out. That's like the only celebrity that I impersonate. And other than that, yeah, I'm just always Schwa de Vive.
Ugh, must be so fun.
It is fun. The best compliment I ever get when people leave is that their face hurts.
Oh, from laughing so and smiling so much. That's awesome.
I love that you have so much fun and you can go to bed early. That's like my dream life.
Oh my God, girl. It's the only way to live. It's the only way to live. Nothing good happens after 9:30 p.m.
Yeah, seriously.
I agree.
Seriously.
Come on.
I absolutely agree with that. So we know that you're a big proponent of being of service and making the world a better place. What is one of the biggest ways you do this in your own life and how does it make you feel?
You know, honestly, I think the biggest thing that I do to be of service is listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I've always been good at. I had to teach myself how to be a good listener. And I still don't think I'm that great. But I try to pay attention when people are talking to me and I try to just care.
Mm.
Or at least make them feel like I do, you know, because everyone wants to be heard.
Absolutely.
And noticed and feel like they're of value. And so I just try to listen to people and then I just try to kind of tell them how, in what ways they're awesome and maybe inspire them to do something that will make them feel more awesome.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's important. I think listening is a lost art. You know, people, whether it's through insecurities or whatever, they're so focused on thinking about what they're going to say next that they're not listening to what the other person is saying. And I agree. I think it is something that you have to learn. I don't think it's something that's innate. And it's not something that we're really taught how to do. You have to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, it's really underrated.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on the family you grow up with, you know, some people are fighting to be heard as kids.
Right.
I was always listened to by my mom. I was always talked at by my dad. And so I was somewhere in the middle, I think, growing up, because those are the what I learned. But as I got older, I realized, oh, if you just present and you just listen and you just are nice and you care, especially if it's a friend, then that person's going to be there for you and you won't be alone. And so it's almost selfish that I try to be of service to other people. Because I know that by doing that, I never have to be alone.
Mm. Right.
And I don't want to be alone. It's right. I think one of the hardest things about losing Landon is just being alone. But I don't ever truly feel that way. If I start to spiral down that path, I don't really allow myself to go too far because I can so easily be reminded of all the great people I have around me.
Absolutely.
That's great.
I'm lucky though. I'm lucky. I'm fortunate.
Mm.
Yeah, and I'm sure Landon is so proud of everything you've done. You know, some people going through this type of loss, they absolutely shut down, and you really are using it as a springboard to help others.
I think it's really the only way for me to survive. It's just the only thing I know how to do. And shutting down, I can just hear Landon so clearly. No.
Right.
No. Get up, baby. I can just hear him, you know, and he was a teacher and he was a leader. And he cared about self-care and he cared about nutrition and health and fitness. And, you know, that was his business.
Right.
And so it would be almost impossible for me to just shut down. It's just not who I am. But that doesn't mean I don't have to work hard at not falling into my traps. I mean, just this morning, I realized how anxious I was feeling. And I realized it's because I've been home for the last 5 or 6 days. I haven't really gone outside much. I've been on social media a lot, way more than I need to be. And those are pitfalls for me.
Right.
It's the mindfulness and awareness that allows me to hear Landon say, no, you need to do the work. You need to put it out there and then you need to walk away.
Right, right.
Very good advice.
Exactly. So, Schwa, when you think about this, what's the legacy you want to leave behind?
Wow, that's a really powerful question. The legacy I want to leave behind is laugh and enjoy today as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And smile and dance and, you know, do the things that make you feel good and love your fellow man. You don't have to like them. I don't like most people. But love them. Love them because they're your brother or sister in humanity. And most importantly, laugh. Mm.
Oh, beautiful. I love all of that. And it's the way we all should live.
Right. It's really a simple thought, but it seems like people have the hardest time doing that.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's what we're here for.
Yeah.
That's why we're here. And I think people get caught up in all the crap.
Oh, it's so easy to.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up and swept up. And like you were saying earlier, you know, whatever it is you're focused on, you're going to get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so easy to spiral into the shit of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why Landon always looked for the beauty. Because he's like, no, I want to spiral into the beauty of these chrysanthemums and, you know, these photographs of Joan Crawford and this wonderful, you know, marathon of dynasty and glamour and glitz. And, you know, that he loved all of that stuff because it's just fun. It's Absolutely. Just fun. Life should be about having fun, whatever that means to you.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. We're so on board with that.
Honey.
Oh, and speaking of.
Honey.
Speaking of fun, I'm hoping you will indulge us and our audience and do a little Liza Minnelli for us before we close out the show.
Oh, you mean me, Liza Minnelli? I just loved you. No, really, Jeb and Carol, thank you. I'm so grateful for you having me on your podcast, The Divine Breadcrumb. You can find it everywhere podcasts are available, on iTunes and thedivinebreadcrumb.com. Oh, it's delicious. I wish I had a pot of jam, fresh strawberry jam, to spread on this podcast. The Divine Breadcrumb. Yeah. life is a cabaret and it's a breadcrumb.
Oh, Liza, we love you. Thank you for that plug.
You're welcome. You're so welcome. Unlike the plugs that my last husband had, which did not look good. They didn't. We got divorced shortly afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, Shaw, that was amazing. That was great. I needed that laugh. Oh, my gosh.
Well, tears. That's what it's all about. A laugh a day keeps everything at bay, honey.
Yes.
It certainly does. Well, before we go, was there anything else you wanted to tell our audience? I think this has just been so fun and you're so inspiring and we're so grateful to have you on.
That's so kind of you to say. You know, I think I said it already, guys. Just like get out there and I don't know, do whatever you can to just feel good today. And if the sun is shining and you have a second, just run outside for like 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable how much better you'll feel. Yeah, just get into it. Like, go have a good one. I mean, what else can you do? Like, that's all we can ask of ourselves is just try to like enjoy ourselves today.
Yes, and I think that's a great message. One day at a time, yes. 1 minute at a time, whatever you need to do, but just make it the best minute you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
Yep. Well, Shwa, thank you so much. We will put all of your contact information in our show notes, but for those of you listening, if you want to get right in there, you can check out Shwa's website at schwapotter.com. Shwa is S-H-U-A potter.com. You can find our episode on thedivinebreadcrumb.com, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And we thank you all for joining us and listening. Schwa, again, it was such a pleasure. Let's see if we can get you to Boston because we'd love to hang out.
Oh, I'm so ready to come to Boston.
Thanks again, Schwa, for joining us. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.